the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Tuesday, and it is the 15th of March in the year 2005, and I'm getting my tape turned over, getting us ready for this evening. Going to talk about Terri Schiavo again tonight, ladies and gentlemen. There hasn't been any uplifting. The black-robed judge, George Greer, is sitting fast. And we have not heard anything yet about whether or not the Department of Children and Family Services is going to enter into this. Judge Greer ruled that they couldn't. What they wanted to do was to get a 60-day stay on the death sentence. We should say the execution date of Terri Schiavo, which is set for Friday, that's day after tomorrow, at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. And they intend to begin withholding food and water from Terri. They're going to slowly, they intend to, let's put it this way, without intervention, they intend to slowly, gruesomely, and torturously execute her, intentionally kill her, as Governor Jeb Bush said, and to put it bluntly, murder. Our spiritual message tonight, and once again, this is Tuesday, the 15th of March in the year 2005, in case I didn't say it right. And once again, thank you for being with us tonight. Our spiritual message tonight is the same as it was last night. This is in Matthew, in the scriptures, in the red, a statement attributed to Jesus, chapter 25. Beginning at verse 35, and this is an excerpt. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. I got a call from Joni in Florida just about 5 minutes before we went on the air, and this was a 1 minute speech that was done today by Congressman Joe Pitts from Pennsylvania. And it's very short and very succinct. This was a one-minute speech. It says, Mr. Speaker, death by dehydration is a painful, agonizing, and arduous process that takes 10 to 14 days. You notice he said death by dehydration first. In addition, to feeling the pangs of hunger and thirst. The skin, lips, and tongue crack. The nose bleeds because of the drying of the mucous membranes. Heaving and vomiting may ensue because of the drying out of the stomach lining. The victim may experience seizures. As the fluid level in the body goes down, the blood pressure goes down, and the heart rate goes up. Respiration often increases as blood is shunted from the periphery to the central part of the body in a desperate attempt to sustain the primary organs. The hands and feet become extreme cold, extremely cold. Compared to starvation and dehydration, death by hanging, firing squad, even the electric chair seems humane. What kind of country imposes such a death even on those guilty of the most heinous crimes? But right now, that death sentence is being carried out not against murderers, rapists, and child molesters, but on some of the most disabled in our midst. Terry is not on a respirator or any artificial life support equipment. Any reasonable person who sees this woman reacting to her parents will realize she is not in a coma, or as it is sometimes called, a persistent vegetative state. Have we, as a nation, become so callous that we have bought into the, quote, quality of life argument, that some people simply are not worth the effort to protect or rehabilitate? And this looks like it ends here. Oh, he said, I hope not. I'm sorry. Let me repeat that last sentence. He said, have we as a nation become so callous that we have bought into the quality of life argument that some people are not worth the effort to protect or rehabilitate? I hope not. I yield back my time. And Joni, thank you for sending that. She looked it up for me, found it on at the government website, and faxed it over to me just before we went on the air, folks. And what I'm going to share with you tonight is I've talked to you about the neurologist, the famous neurologist whose name I can never remember. His name is Dr. William Hammesfahr. And Dr. Hammesfahr is a nationally known and respected neurologist, and he was nominated for the Nobel Prize in Medicine for the wonderful results that the man that he has gotten for people in Terry's condition, and some even worse, probably, folks. And he was asked to do an examination on Terry. What I'm reading to you is dated September 12, 2002. And I'll just start here. He says, regarding Terry Schiavo, this is dated September 12, 2002. I was asked to examine Terry Schiavo per the request of the Second District Court of Appeal. They requested that current information about her present medical condition be obtained. They also requested that an evaluation be performed to ascertain treatment options. Ms. Schiavo was in her usual state of good health until February 25, 1990, when her husband reported that he was awakened from sleep approximately 6 a.m. by her falling. He reports that she was unresponsive. Paramedics were called, and aggressive resuscitation was performed, with 7 defibrillations en route. In the emergency room, a possible diagnosis of heart attack was briefly entertained, but then dismissed after blood chemistries and serial EKGs did not show evidence of a heart attack. Now, you know, that's what all the newspapers are saying, or the majority of them, isn't it, folks? She suffered a heart attack, and now she's in a permanent vegetative state. This is a controlled media we're talking about, and they have been part of this death sentence, against Terry Schiavo. And then Dr. Hammesfahr goes on. He says, similarly, a pulmonary or lung cause of the disorder was ruled out in the emergency room after normal blood gases and chest x-rays were obtained. The possibility of toxic shock syndrome was entertained. The diagnosis of the cause of her condition was unknown. Her admission laboratory studies showed low potassium level, markedly elevated glucose level, and a normal toxic screen without evidence of diet pills or amphetamines. The abnormal potassium level and sugar level were found on admission to the emergency room and were successfully corrected by the hospital staff over the next several days. The patient had a difficult hospital course with the development of poorly controlled seizures, and prolonged coma states, requiring for a time ventilator support. However, the staff noted improvement, and it was recommended by several physicians that she be discharged to an intensive rehabilitation center. She was eventually transferred to Metaplex in Bradenton for intensive rehabilitation. She was poorly responsive. However, after a brain stimulator was placed in November of 1990, the staff started to report greater interactions of the patient with her environment, including intermittently, apparently following commands, turning her head to voice, tracking visually, etc. This is something we hadn't mentioned. She's been in this state, under this torture, in this prison for 14 years, folks. And she was married to her, quote, beloved husband only for 5 years before this happened. A very short period of time, and these past 14 years, he has been her legal guardian because he is her legal husband. And it doesn't matter. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, this is Randy in Florida.
Hi, Randy.
I was at the rally for Terry Schiavo Sunday.
Yes.
And when Mel Gibson sent a message that they read to her parents.
Yes.
And Dr. Dawson sent some pairs of marks as well.
How many people were there, Randy?
500 to 1,000, I imagine.
I read an account of Nurse Ford, Cheryl Ford.
Right.
And she had mentioned that there were thousands there.
Yeah, it was more than 1,000 at the most.
Okay. Well, that's still a lot more than were there at the vigil with the candles when they were killing her the last time, isn't it?
Yeah, but, I mean, there should have been 100,000 people there.
I agree, Randy.
Hopefully, you know, that there will be that many people at the come Friday at the hospice down there. They need to have a human wall of people between Terry and whoever.
Yeah, well, the staff is all inside. And so what they're going to have to do is flow in and through and around and hold everybody hostage who's planning on doing the surgery to remove the feeding tube.
Whatever it takes to save that woman.
That's right.
Bo Grice is on his way down there to stand in the gap for her. That's my understanding.
I had heard that. And while I have very little respect or regard for the for Bo Grice himself. If he can do something, then God bless him and more power to him.
Well, the Weavers pretty much own their existence today.
No, that's a bunch of BS, honey. Bo Grice went in there wired, and he has said this publicly, that he and Jack McLam had planned to take Randy Weaver out by force if he wouldn't come himself. And Randy Weaver did come himself, but Jack, Bo Grice was also wired. And, you know, when you think about it, if you're wired and you're going into somebody's place that you're really there to help them, you're going to open up your coat and you're going to point and you're going to go shh with your lips, with your finger. But he didn't say a word. And how he justified it is that he made sure that he steered the conversation away from anything that could incriminate Randy Weaver. But we won't get into that. I just want our listeners to be real clear. And this could be an attempt on Bo Grice's part to get some credibility back. I don't care why he's doing it. If he does it and he's successful, I'm all for it, Randy.
Well, that being aside, Michael Chavo is going to be on Nightline tonight.
He is. What time?
Well, about 11:30 Eastern time.
Okay, would that be Larry King Live?
Depending upon your time zone.
I'm Eastern. Would that be Larry King? Oh, you said Nightline.
Nightline, yes.
Oh, I don't get the networks.
On ABC.
Oh, gosh. Maybe somebody will tape that and report for us what happens, because I don't get the networks here. I'm on Big Dish, and I'm too far away from the city to get the, the networks.
Okay. Well, anyway, people just need to stand up and protect Terry, whatever it takes, because
that's
it doesn't
right.
look like our government's gonna do its duty and defend her.
No. Well, the same creatures that are behind this cult to kill are the same creatures that are in control of the U.S. government and most governments around the country, around the world, Randy.
Well, it's up to the churches and the people that live down there to rise up to the occasion.
Yes, it is.
Do
you live in Florida, Randy?
Yeah, I'm in the capital.
Oh, bless you, honey, and you're going to be there.
I'm aiming to be down there.
Wonderful. What street is the hospice on? It's hospice, Woodside?
Woodside Hospice?
Uh-huh.
I've got the address right here. Let's have it. 6774 102nd Avenue North in Clearwater.
Okay. Do you have a phone number there?
Yeah, it's 727.
727.
541.
541. 4199. Randy, thank you for that.
Yeah, I've already emailed the county commission and the sheriff down there, and then the phone number for the vice president of operations, his name is Scott, K-I-S-T-L-E-R.
Where is this, at the hospice?
At the hospice.
Scott Kistler?
Kistler.
Okay.
His phone number is same area code 586-4432.
And he's director of operations, did
you? President of operations.
Vice president of operations. All right.
You have the sheriff's phone number down there?
No, you may as well give it to us, honey. Sheriff, is this? This wouldn't be Sheriff Coates, would it?
Sheriff Coates.
Oh, okay. We do have the number here.
Okay.
You don't happen to have an email address for him, do you?
Yes, I do.
All right. We could use that, honey.
It's D. Williams.
It's what?
D as in Tom Williams.
Okay.
D. Williams at PCSO for Pinellas County Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
PCSONet.com.
Okay. And that's Sheriff Coates, C-O-A-T-S?
Right.
Randy?
People need to just be buzzing their phones off the hook.
You bet they do. We all do.
Calling them for around the clock.
Randy, give me, I had the phone number here somewhere, honey. I've got papers all around me. Give us the phone number there, please.
At the hospice?
No, Sheriff Coates.
727. 582.
Okay.
6201.
You have the okay, and we have his email address as twilliams@pcsonet.com.
That's it.
And you have the fax number?
No fax number.
Okay.
I don't have that one.
I've got one here somewhere, and I guess I can find it because I had it available earlier. Because phone.
Yeah, well, it's available online if you just look up the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office.
Okay. Darn it. I set that thing aside tonight so I could give it out again. Well, we'll give the phone number again. And, Randy, if you find the fax number, give us a quick call, would you, honey?
Okay. Very good.
Thank you. And thank you for your call.
All right. Thank you.
And bye-bye, honey. All right, folks. Let me give you those numbers again. If you would like to call the Woodside Hospice, where the employees there will be the ones carrying out the execution, if it takes place, the phone number is 727-541-4199. 727-541-4199. All of these phone numbers that I'll give you, just write 727 for the area code. And Scott Kistler, K-I-S-T-L-E-R, is vice president of operations there. And his phone number is 586-4432, 586-4432. Sheriff Coates, and Eleanor White was on with us last night, and you heard the beautiful letter that she sent to him. It was so well worded, and basically what she reminded him was that in his position, he not only has the authority, he has the duty to stop a crime, an intended crime. He has the duty and the responsibility. And the law exists already that would be protecting Terry Schiavo if the law in Florida was being followed. And she told him that if he doesn't do what his position authorizes and demands that he do, that he will live with it, her death, on his conscience. And these people need to be reminded this is outright murder, folks. Sheriff Coates' email address is T as in Thomas Williams at PCSONet, Pinellas County Sheriff's Office, P as in Patru, C, S as in Samuel, onet.com. His phone number is 582-6201. 582-6201. I'll give you Jeb Bush's phone number again, because you see, according to that amicus brief, he absolutely was very clear, at least his legal team was, that he has a mandate as the governor of the state to see that the laws are faithfully executed. And then they proceeded to state the laws already on the books that prohibit what is happening and what has been happening to Terry. And Jeb Bush's phone number is 850-488-7146. 850-488-7146. His email is jeb@jeb.org. Okay? We'll stop there for right now. Oh, here's George Greer. Judge George Greer, in case you might like to make a phone call to him. It is 727-464-3933. I wonder how much money he had to be paid in order to order the murder of a woman, a cognizant, alive, alert, aware woman. I wonder what it took, folks, or what kind of blackmail, maybe. Maybe it was simply blackmail. They all usually have a skeleton in their closet that makes them susceptible to blackmail. I just found my paper with the sheriff's fax number on it. I want to remind you that in the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, they state that the people in the positions, in high positions, influential positions, will all be people who have skeletons in their closet, so that they will carry out orders just to save their own ass. Excuse my vulgarity. Here is Sheriff Coates' fax number. It is 582-6459. It would be good if you make a call, write down what you're going to say, or write it down afterwards. You can handwrite it and fax it to him. Keep his fax machine running. keep the phones ringing and keep the fax machine running. Do the same at the hospice. Do the same at Jeb Bush's office. Do whatever you can, folks. I want to go on here with this Dr. Hammersfar's notes on his examination of Terry. He said that she was eventually transferred to Metaplex in Bradenton for intensive rehabilitation. She was poorly responsive, however, after a brain stimulator was placed in November 90. The staff started to report greater interactions of the patient with her environment, including intermittently, apparently following commands, turning her head to voice, tracking visually, etc. The pattern continued even after discharge to a nursing home, although her course from that time on included multiple medical problems. Listen very closely to this. Her course from that time on included multiple medical problems, including recurrent urinary tract infections and hospitalizations, at times with severely low episodes of blood pressure due to a lack of treatment of urinary tract infections ordered by the husband. In other words, he forbid treatment. Urinary tract infections and subsequent urinary sepsis requiring hospitalization. During 1998, she was evaluated by Dr. James Barnhill, neurologist, who testified that he examined her for 10 minutes and determined that she had no chance for recovery, was in a persistent vegetative state. He identified that her skull was filled with spinal fluid. There was no brain present on the scans. No brain present on the scans. They showed that, by the way, folks, on Larry King Live when Philos and Michael Schiavo were on Larry King Live. That probably really impressed a lot of uninformed people. He said all responses he identified were reported as reflexes. He obtained no blood pressure, nor did anyone else, apparently on the day of his exam. The closest documented blood pressures being obtained 2 days earlier and 5 days later. No tests, including urinary tract infection evaluations, blood tests, EEGs, evoked potentials, or new CT MRI exams. No new CT MRI exams were ordered. A year later, he again confirmed his earlier diagnosis. He felt no tests of any sort were needed for evaluation. Now listen to this. In the spring of 2000, three physicians, including Dr. Jay Carpenter, who is a former chief of medicine at Morton Plant Hospital, filed affidavits after observing Ms. Schiavo. All three physicians stated, "It is visually apparent that Ms. Schiavo is able to swallow and, in fact, does swallow her own saliva." And later on in this, he said he believed that she could eat without a feeding tube. The feeding tube is not necessary. When they take the feeding tube out of Terry, food and water has been prohibited. Oral food and water has been prohibited, folks, because she's a permanent vegetable. Now, if she was a permanent vegetable, why would they have to order no oral food and water? If you're in a permanent vegetative state, that would be impossible, because they know that this woman is very cognitive. We have got to take a quick break, and I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Get your pen in your hand, please. And please write my address down. The broadcast you're listening to is Listener Supported. And you are the listener. And you are invited if you would like to see this broadcast stay on the air. It is up to you, always up to you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dough.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, folks, I'm back with you. I would like to give you one more phone number here. And this might seem futile, but we never know. Remember we talked about the Advocacy Center for Persons with Disabilities? Well, I have a copy of the letter that was sent to Lily after Lily contacted them back in 2003. This was December 23rd. And they said, "Hello, Miss Zbinden. Thank you for your thoughtfulness and interest regarding Miss Shivo and the complex ethical issues that she represents. It benefits us all for people such as you to enter into the dialogue about disability issues. Now, since the initial withdrawal of hydration and nourishment from Terry Schiavo on Wednesday, October 15, 2003, the Advocacy Center has received numerous complaints of possible neglect concerning Ms. Schiavo. Additionally, we have received reports there may have been a change in circumstances regarding Ms. Schiavo's condition since the last full review in state court." This was October of 2003, folks. Now, I want you to listen to this. "The center is presently making demands in order to acquire reports and records necessary to undertake a thorough and impartial investigation of the multiple complaints that we have received. Never mind. I missed the whole paragraph here. And this is the one that's most important. I want you to hear what they said. "It is the Advocacy Center's federal mandate. The Advocacy Center is a federally funded agency in Florida, folks, and it has to obey the federal laws under which it operates. It is the Advocacy Center's federal mandate pursuant to 29 U.S.C. Section 794 parentheses A. And in parentheses it says Doc 1 parentheses and under 42 U.S. Code, Section 1504, 3, paren A, paren 2, paren capital B. So it is the Advocacy Center's federal mandate as the designated protection and advocacy agency for the state of Florida to investigate complaints of abuse and or neglect against persons with disabilities." And then in the last sentence, it says, "In order to preserve," this is big and bold, "in order to preserve the integrity of our investigation during its pendency, no further statement will be made to the public or the press." Now, this, we read an article, and Pat Anderson, who was the lawyers for the Schindlers up until this new one about a year or so ago, called the Advocacy Center for Persons with Disabilities the shark of all agencies. And if they enter into an investigation, everything comes to a halt, including any court orders. Now, evidently, these people, God knows what happened. But they were supposedly investigating complaints of possible abuse. Well, when a woman is the ward of the guardian and is never allowed to go outside and see the sunshine, when she is never allowed physical therapy so that her body begins to contract, the extremities begin to contract and become stiff and spastic, when she is not allowed medical treatment, when she is not allowed swallowing therapy, where they could remove the feeding tube. I told you that from what I recall, and I believe that my memory serves me correctly, she didn't need that feeding tube. They put the feeding tube in, allegedly, to make it easier for the caregivers, you know, just to shove a can of Equal or something in that tube. She swallows, folks. And I thought maybe you would like the number of this place. I'll give you just the Tallahassee number. They've got three offices there. And the phone number is 850-488-9070. 850, that's the area code, 488-9071. And the fax is 488-8640. And for those in Florida, there's a toll-free number, 800-342-0823. And maybe you would like to call. By the way, nobody signed this letter. Isn't that amazing? Lily wrote to them, and she said, "Dear Advocacy Center," she just wrote it, "I have not bothered to call or write since I thought you would come riding in before now to save Terry. But her execution date is on 3/18/05, and you've done nothing to stop it. Maybe you should be made aware of two very important points." And this is quoting from the statutes, the Florida statutes. "An incapacitated person retains certain enumerated rights," and she refers to the section. "And the other one, while many rights may be delegated to a guardian, the right to receive necessary services and rehabilitation may not. Similarly," and this is still part of the law, folks, "the right to receive necessary services and rehabilitation may not be removed by the court." And that's end quoting. And Lily said, "Judge Greer cannot order that water and food be withheld. The governor has a constitutional duty to take care that the laws be executed faithfully." And then in number two, she said, "I believe," well, she said she referred to insurance reserve fraud, and she gave them a website where they could go and check it out. I won't get into that because it's more convoluted, but these are the kinds of things that wonderful, you wonderful, wonderful people are doing. And it just needs to keep up and pick up, doesn't it? Anyway, where I was reading Dr. Hamisfar's notes, he said that all three physicians that in the spring of 2000, three physicians filed affidavits after observing Ms. Schiavo. All three physicians. This was 5 years ago, folks. All three physicians stated that it is visually apparent Ms. Schiavo is able to swallow, and in fact does swallow her own saliva. The patient continued with no physical therapy. Communication or speech therapy or any routine medical screening evaluations and any treatment, no treatment, treatments such as dentist care, mammographs, gynecological exams, or pap smears during this time. If this isn't neglect and abuse by the guardian, I don't know what is, folks. In May 2002, access to the patient was allowed by two physicians appointed by the family. At that time, my observation of Terry Schiavo in person occurred, having previously viewed videotape that was first shown at her first trial. The examination, there were videographers present. I'm going to try to scan down here. Medical reviews of the charts provided were carried out, from which the above history is obtained. He spent, on September 3rd, he spent approximately from 11 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon with Terry, and returning the next day to also observe Dr. Maxfield and complete his portion of the exam. He said the exam was videotaped at his request. They set the video camera up, and Mr. Michael Scheifele was present. He came into the room. He said, "I introduced myself to Miss Scheifele. She was looking at the ceiling in a chair. She had a wide-eyed look to her. She appeared to be aware of my presence with slight facial changes and tone changes in her body. She didn't look at me or turn to look in the direction of my voice, continuing instead to look directly forward. Her mother then entered the room, coming toward her and speaking her name. She immediately showed awareness of the presence of her mother, looking for her and then finding her visually when the mother was approximately 8 inches from her face. She then smiled and made sounds. Her father also entered the room with further apparent recognition by the daughter. By the way, folks, Dr. Hammesfar has offered to treat Terry free of charge to rehabilitate her. And they want to kill her. If she ever could talk, you know what she would say probably, don't you? She would tell all. And maybe that Michael Scheifele would be frying an old Sparky in Florida. Or I think, if I'm not mistaken, they got rid of old Sparky because those two Israeli, one Israeli judge and a Jewish lawyer presented a brief to the Florida State Supreme Court based solely on the Talmud, claiming that old Sparky was cruel and unusual punishment. Isn't that a laugh? Isn't that a laugh? But I said that, it was the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court received a brief based solely on the Talmud. What does that tell you? And it's this kind of Talmudic law that we're under that is allowing what's happening today, folks. I'll go on. Well, I'm just going to excerpt it here. He said the first part of the exam included observing her interactions with her mom and dad. She clearly is aware of them, attempts to interact with them, the sounds, facial expressions, and searching out and tracking them. There are several previous reports by medical personnel and others of her responding to live piano music. So he asked Terry's mom to bring a tape of piano music, and the separate pieces were listened. He said the first she appeared aware of the sound, but would not sing or interact significantly. The second, she did interact, making sounds with the music. She stopped making these sounds when the music stopped. In other words, she was trying to sing to the music, folks. During this time, she would move her head and track her head and eyes to the sound of the music or her mother's voice. And then he's talking about the exam where he began. He's trying to get a blood pressure, but he couldn't because the arm was so constricted. And he said that she looked at him and would track him with voluntary facial and upper torso movements. He later moved the left arm and attempted to release contractures. The contractions, well, basically what he said is that he was able, after about 45 minutes, think about this, that the arm that he worked on for about 45 minutes, he was able to release from the contractions to 140 degrees. And then he said at one time, after working on her arm for approximately 20 minutes and no further extension of the elbow, her dad walked up and started speaking to her, and the elbow immediately extended approximately another 20 degrees. He said this was during the time that I had been talking with Miss Shivo. The music was also running. Yet with neither the addition of the music nor my voice did the elbow extend. When her dad came forward and was speaking to her, she immediately extended the arm further. At other times, he would speak more sharply, and she would immediately tighten and appear to lose her spot of visual focusing. Oh, I see. She is a vegetable. Is that... Does this sound like a vegetable to you folks? A general physical exam was performed. I want to get down here on this. He examined all the extremities for their ability, the contractures, he calls them, for the spasticity. And I'm not going to go into that. This is where he said, approximately after 40 minutes of massage and release, the exam in this upper extremity showed spasticity on the scale, and at times later in the exam, a 2 over 4. And this was a 4 over 4 on the scale is severe spasticity, no range of motion. And after 40 minutes of massage, she was on the scale of 2 over 4, which is moderate spasticity, but full range of motion after 40 minutes, folks. You're on the air.
Hi, Jackie. It's Eleanor again.
Hi, Eleanor.
You were talking about the SHARP, the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. I was poking around the net a little bit, and I found another portal, a way to get at them that I don't think anybody's tried yet. I'm going to certainly try tomorrow. And that is, these people have local, what they call family care councils. That they're like branches of this agency.
Okay.
I have some contact information here you might want to pass on to the listeners.
All right. Honey, let me grab my... tried to get the phone. You sound a little bit low tonight, honey.
This is draining me. I mean, this
is that what it is?
Hell.
Okay, this is the advocacy center, yes?
Yes, and these are family care councils. And these are people that work with the agency. They're affiliated with the agency. And they deal with families who have problems along these lines.
Good.
So what I'm saying is that these people might be...
a little more receptive.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Now, there are two of them for Pinellas County. And the first one is Rob Mokree. And his last name is spelled M-O-C-H-R-I-E.
Okay.
His telephone number is 727-556-0194.
Okay.
His email is P, as in Papa, O, E, T, as in Tango.
Like poet.
Poet. And then M, as in Mike, O, C. Poet, M-O-C.
Okay.
At AOL.com.
Okay.
Second one is Ann Millen, spelled M-I-L-L-A-N.
Milan, maybe?
Could be.
M-I-L-L-A-N, Ann Millen.
No, there's not two N's. There's just one on
the I'm sorry, honey. M-I-L-L-A-N.
No, M-I-L-L, like a mill.
Yeah.
Then followed by A-N.
Yeah, okay.
And her home phone number, these people get their home phone number.
Oh, wow, this is great.
Yes, it's 727.
Okay.
785.
Okay.
0112.
Okay.
Now, that number may have a fax connected with it, so you can try faxing.
Okay.
Now, her email is AMN, that's Alpha Mike November.
Oh, A-M-N.
Yes, that's her email I'm giving you now.
Okay, A-M-N.
Victor India Charlie.
V-I-C.
Yeah, at Tampa Bay, which is all one word,
mm-hmm.
dot R-R shark.com.
Huh. That's all lowercase, right, hon?
Yes.
All right, I want to repeat this for our listeners, and you listen to me to make sure I didn't transpose some numbers.
Okay.
And folks, what Eleanor was telling us, in case you may not have heard, is that these people, these are their home phone numbers, and they work in family care councils connected with the Advocacy Center for Persons with Disabilities. And the first one was, these are both in Pinellas County, Rob, R-O-B, like in Robert, Mokri, M as in Mary, O-C, Charlie, H, Henry, R, I, E. Rob Mokri, 727-556-0194. 727-556-0194. His email is poet, P-O-E-T, and then M as in Mary, O-C as in Charlie, poet, M-O-C, at AOL.com. The other one is Ann Milan, M as in Mary, I, double L, A, N as in Nancy. Same area code, 727. Her phone number is 785-0112. And here is an email address for her. It is A as in Ann, M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, V, Victory, I, India, C, Charlie, AMNVIC at Tampa Bay, all one word, dot, and then rr.com. And you know what? Be sure, folks, when you talk to them, to remind them what this letter said from the Advocacy Center. It is the Advocacy Center's federal mandate as the designated protection and advocacy agency to... It is a federal mandate for their agency to investigate complaints of abuse and or neglect against persons with disabilities, and they evidently didn't do a very damn good investigation when they did it. I'm not talking about these people. But you know what? Anything is... try anything and everything we can, folks. And Eleanor, anything else, honey?
Yes, I would like to suggest that we ask them what happened to their request for Perry's records, because that's a year and a half old now.
That's right. That's what they said. They were making demands in order to acquire reports and records.
Especially, we've got to find out what happened to those records.
What happened to the records? Okay. And according to Pat Anderson, that they should, because it's a federal mandate, according to Pat Anderson, when they get into an investigation, everything stops, including court orders.
That's right. Anyway, I'll sign off, Jackie. God bless.
Thank you, and you too, Eleanor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, honey. All right, folks, I'll tell you what, we're almost out of time. I'm going to tell you at the end of this Dr. Samosvar's notes, there's more to it, but and I've got this almost ready to send to Darren, and so he'll put it on the website at sweetliberty.org. It'll be under Dr. Hamasfar's notes. He said, here is his impression. The patient is not in a coma. She is alert and responsive to her environment. She responds to specific people best. She tries to please others by doing activities for which she gets verbal praise. That sounds like us, doesn't it? She responds negatively to poor tone of voice. She responds to music. She differentiates sounds from voices. She differentiates specific people's voices from others. She differentiates music from stray sound. She attempts to verbalize. She has voluntary control over multiple extremities. She can swallow. She is partially blind. She is probably aphasic. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry. Aphasia. Has a degree of receptive aphasia. She can feel pain. He went into detail in this in these notes. Pressure anywhere on her body. She was aware of it, folks. You think if they starve, if they dehydrate her, and starve her, that this is going to be a painless and dignified death. He said she can feel pain. And on this last point, it is interesting to observe that the records from hospice show frequent medication administered for pain by the staff. They give her pain medication, folks. Why would you do that to a person who's a vegetable, whose brain is gone, has no feeling, is brain dead, permanent vegetative state? Why would you give him pain medicine? And then he went on to tell what type of treatment that she should be having and what could happen for her. He said, not in this report, but he made the statement on an interview that he believed that with therapy, Terry could be sitting at the dinner table having dinner with her parents. So, we're out of time here. We're actually not. We've got a couple of minutes left, but by the time our shortwave listeners hear it, we are going to be out of time. And I have to remember that when I'm going to open the phone lines at the end of the broadcast, because our people, our listeners on the Internet, unless they have two lines, they can't call in. So, folks, let me do this again. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in, naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Thank you for being with us. And let us keep Terry as we did back in October of 2003. Keep her bathed in light, ladies and gentlemen, that protective, loving light of our Creator. Just visualize her body filled with that light and the light glowing out around her. Maybe that's what sustained her for 6 days without any organ damage back in October of 2003. Good night, my dear friends, and God bless you. Be back tomorrow night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
How would you like to add 20 years to your life? Dr. Earl Mandel, the world's number one leading authority on health and nutrition, has revealed...